from KQED.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the California Healthcare Foundation, supporting ideas and innovations to improve healthcare for all Californians, on the web at chcf.org, and URS, a global engineering and construction firm headquartered in San Francisco, providing engineering, construction, and technical support to public agencies and private companies. URS.com.
This is the California Report. I'm Scott Schaefer. On this Thanksgiving weekend show, the way we talk, is there such a thing as a California accent? And we'll meet a high school quarterback from Sweden who's tearing up the football field in Southern California.
You have to learn how to give interviews whether you win or lose. And then he goes, but I'm only 15. And I think a lot of times we all forget that.
Also, a pro soccer team in Tijuana drawing big crowds on both sides of the border. And she's a physician and a songwriter whose music is infused with her cross-cultural upbringing.
It feels exciting to be able to pull from, you know, this gumbo of language to create a kind of a pastiche and collage sound of languages.
It's the California Report. Thanksgiving weekend is a huge travel holiday, which means many of us will be hearing the accents of friends and family visiting from other parts of the country. You know, Boston, New York, Georgia. But what about us? Is there such a thing as a California accent? Well, as Charlotte Baer reports, a group of Stanford researchers is trying to figure that out.
Think you know what a California accent sounds like? San Jose native Stefano Scalia does.
The joke is that it's this neutral newscaster. If you watch any of the guys on CNN and stuff like that, they sound like us. So we're the kind of the non-accent.
Stanford researchers say the joke's on Scalia, since everyone has an accent. So what is it here? Take the word B-O-A-T, for instance. Would a Californian say
boat
or
boat?
Penny Eckert says actually, there's no way to tell which pronunciation is truly Californian, at least not yet. She's a professor of linguistics at Stanford. A few years ago, she helped launch a project called Voices of California to figure out the local vernacular.
We realized that nobody really knows anything to speak of about the dialects of the West, and people can say just about anything they want. And some people were saying just about anything they wanted. I mean, we're all familiar with Moon Unit Zappa's imitation of Valley Girls, right?
Hi! Uh-huh. My name is Andrea Wilson. Uh-huh. That's right, Andrea. Uh-huh. I know. It's like, I do not talk funny, I'm sure.
Eckert says, like, obviously, it's pretty far out to stereotype all Californians as having a San Fernando Valley Girl accent. But there aren't many examples of what authentic California speech is.
Ten, cult, creek, take.
So the Stanford team has started recording lists of words and interviews with native Californians of all ages and races, as long as their communities have been here a few generations to establish a local dialect.
Pull, gym, feel, greasy.
Bowl, gym, coop, cot.
The researchers decided to kick off the project in the Central Valley.
Of course, when people think about California, they always think of L.A. and San Francisco. There's a big difference between coastal California and the rest of California.
Absolutely. People talk differently in Bakersfield. I knew that answer before they even asked me that.
John Coley volunteered to help out with the Stanford study by giving the researchers a tour of Bakersfield, where he was born and raised.
If you look up the street here, you can probably see the mountain horizon line of Oildale. It's usually lower income, they were Okies, you know, and they called themselves Okies too there, you know.
Coley says there's so much Oklahoma influence in Bakersfield because of the Dust Bowl migration, he can't imagine why his out-of-state friends think he talks like Spicoli from the movie Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Well, I'll tell you, Stu, I did battle some humongous waves. But, you know, just like I told the guy on ABC, danger is my business.
Beach people talk real funny to me. I mean, I don't even know how to swim, or I don't even live near water, so I don't know how I could be a surfer.
Stanford graduate student Annette D'Onofrio is still studying Coley's speech, but says so far he sounds more like a Southern boy than a surfer to her, especially when she asked him to read a few key words.
He would say the word pull or pool, but it sounded like pool. Like, I couldn't tell which word he was saying.
Pool, pool.
Same with gym and gem.
Gym, gym.
And it's like, I don't know which word that was. What was it?
The researchers say mergers, or saying words the same that are pronounced differently in other parts of the country, are common throughout the Central Valley. But Penny Eckert says the valley is certainly not homogenous. On its northern tip in Redding, the team found hints of the Pacific Northwest.
This is this great guy telling me a story about he got into a fight.
Well, here's Greg getting ready to get in this fight.
So listen to the way he says Greg.
Greg.
Greg. You hear that? That's north. They do that in Oregon and Washington.
Linguists say picking up a little bit of Northwest and mixing it with some of the South is part of how California is carving out its own accent. But speakers here might also be inventing something entirely new. Annette D'Onofrio imitates some pronunciations she hasn't heard anywhere else in the country.
Instead of boot, you're getting boot. Jack sounds more like jock. To someone from Minnesota, I would say jack, you know, and so here to say jock. It's a totally different vowel for me.
The pronunciations are so innovative, the Stanford team has dubbed them the California vowel shift, a trait they're attributing to the Bay Area, LA, and other coastal cities.
If you try to think about what you think a surfer or a skater or a valley girl talks like and do it, you can feel your mouth feels different. And I think that that has to do a lot with the way that the vowels are shifting.
Yep, she said it. Saturday Night Live sketch The Californians might be over the top, but it's not entirely off base.
Okay, let's go over it one more time. I know you can nail this. Orange. Shane placed the orange near the fountain. Now you try.
Mr. Shane placed the orange near the fountain.
Good, Rosa, you're improving.
Of course, the team has only done a few hundred interviews, not enough to know how widespread these dialects are yet. One thing they do know is that people will try to talk like those they want to bond with. So the accents we choose help us create our California communities. For the California Report, I'm Charla Bear.
This Thanksgiving weekend has plenty to keep college football fans entertained, especially in Los Angeles, where top-ranked Notre Dame takes on the USC Trojans and the Stanford Cardinal hope to tackle the UCLA Bruins. Meanwhile, not far away, an up-and-coming high school quarterback is getting rave reviews from college football scouts who think he has a big future. As KPCC's Vanessa Romo tells us, he comes from a place where football means soccer.
Kevin Dillman is 6'4", weighs about 210 pounds, and is a force on the football field. The 16-year-old quarterback moved to La Mirada with its tracked homes and cul-de-sacs to play football for the Matadors. The Swedish sophomore is projected to be one of the country's top college football recruits from the class of 2015. But for all of his talents as QB1, that's not what he played this year. Jim Phillips, the team's social media director, tweets on the sidelines.
He's playing free safety on defense. Wide receiver. I think we've had him at defensive end, but I can't remember.
La Mirada is playing against Bishop Amat, a local Catholic high school. At this point, the Matadors are down by 14, and Phillips is waiting for Dillman to do something impressive, like he did in the season's first game against St. Paul High.
He returned the opening kickoff of the game. 97 yards for a touchdown.
In the end, La Mirada can't build momentum. It's their first of two losses for the season.
Well, I always knew I wanted to play football in the U.S., but I didn't know it was going to be possible for me to play high school all 4 years.
How Kevin Dillman ended up here goes back a generation. His father was a foreign exchange student at La Mirada High School more than 30 years ago. He kept in touch with his classmates and brought his son for a visit when the boy was 13. That's when varsity football coach Mike Machete got a look at Kevin's arm.
I believe he was in eighth grade. We were practicing. He was on the sidelines throwing with his dad, and I remember looking over saying, "Who's the 23-year-old, standing over there on the sidelines?"
A year later, Dillman enrolled at La Mirada High School under a tourist visa. but that expired after only a few months. So he packed up and headed home to southern Sweden.
We knew that Kevin was going to be a highly recruited football player, so we didn't want him to stay here on an expired visa. That would make him an illegal citizen. Then the government could make it hard for him down the road.
Dillman filed more paperwork, lifted weights, and waited for 7 months before he was granted U.S. citizenship. Almost immediately, he was back in his number 10 jersey, and his teammates welcomed him back the way teenagers do, with a slew of nicknames.
All the Swede. Yeah, Swede, sweetness, sweetie. Yeah, that's it.
That's cute. I love picturing all the huge guys on your team calling you sweetie.
Yeah. And sweetness even worse. Big old line coach called me sweetness. That's pretty funny.
Coach Machete put together a highlight reel, and in came a flurry of college offers.
Okay. UCLA, Louisville, Arkansas, Old Miss, Utah, Colorado. There we go. Now I have two more. I don't know.
The last two are Florida State and Nebraska. Because he's still a kid, Kevin's been living with a host family.
Well, it's kind of a funny story because no one ever told me.
Nancy Myers is the fill-in mom in Kevin's new life. She says her husband Kenny had worked it all out with Coach Machete and somehow forgot to mention it to her until she ran into a friend.
And she goes, oh, so you're going to take the Swede in? And I'm all, what are you talking about? I had no clue. I'm all, no, absolutely not.
But it didn't take long to melt her heart.
I kept picturing a big Swede, like a big lineman type of guy. And when I answered the door, it was Kevin. I go, oh my gosh. I go, you need to be a model. What are you doing playing football?
Nancy and Kenny, who coaches La Mirada's freshman team, both say Dillman is an extremely focused kid. He has a 3.8 GPA and keeps his room relatively clean, which is the only condition his mom gave him to let him move to another continent. Dillman texts his parents every day, and his dad follows his game in real time on Twitter. Nancy says Dillman is usually so poised that it's easy to overlook how intimidating it is to be in the spotlight. She recently told him,
I go, you have to learn how to give interviews whether you win or lose. And then he goes, but I'm only 15. And I think a lot of times we all forget that.
Dillman's getting a lot of opportunities to improve his interviewing skills. The day I showed up for practice, Swedish reporter Nick Kramer was there to interview Dillman.
You know, he might be the future Peyton Manning, that kind of thing. You know, it's like being strikers, like the Ronaldo of soccer, if you make it.
The other boys on the team seem unfazed by the crew and the attention thrown on Dillman. They know about the multiple scholarship offers, but nobody's jealous, says Tristan Tristeo.
They're coming to look at a lot of the players, and then while they're looking at those players, they see even other players that they're interested in. So it kind of works out for the whole team.
Dillman says being around such great players is what drives him. Still, he's not one to brag. You must know that you're super talented, obviously, now.
Well, I like to see it as I have potential.
He says he doesn't have a favorite school yet, but wherever he goes, he hopes it'll lead to the NFL, with regular visits to Sweden. For the California Report, I'm Vanessa Romo.
Tijuana, Mexico, is best known for drug violence and tacky tourist shops. But the city of more than a million residents has deep cultural and economic ties to the north. And now you can add sports to that connection. The Tijuana Cholos soccer team is tied for first place in Mexico. And as Brooke Binkowski reports from Tijuana, the Cholos are becoming a regional team whose players, reputation, and fans transcend borders.
Dean Mitchell isn't ashamed to admit it. He's a fanatic.
I've been a soccer fan all my life, but I've never had team success. L.A., San Diego. So I had to go to Portland, Seattle, places like that to see it, but I always knew Mexico loved it.
Mitchell's having a beer with friends in the dirt parking lot at Estadio Caliente, Tijuana's soccer stadium, where the Cholos are about to play a match. He lives in San Diego, but he makes the sometimes hours-long trip across the border and back every time there's a game in Tijuana. Mitchell says it's the most fun he's had going to soccer games in years.
Here, the whole city's going nuts, and they haven't had anything before. So you got this city with a real bad reputation that's showing off to the league how great of an experience it is to be here.
Rafael Maya is also tailgating with friends before the game, eating ceviche and carne asada. He's standing in front of his white truck, which today has three huge flags on it, a U.S. flag, a Mexican flag, and a flag bearing the Cholos logo.
Tijuana's getting out there. People are knowing more about Tijuana because of the soccer and not necessarily because of the violence, even though the violence, I think, has been being dropped. I mean, you don't see see all these horrible shootings anymore. You know, I've lived down in TJ maybe 14 years, and I've never seen so much as a robbery.
Cholos is short for Club Tijuana Choloscuintles de Caliente. Choloscuintles are hairless dogs, sacred to pre-Hispanic cultures, and noted for their unflagging energy, scrappy tenacity, and loyalty. Kind of like the team, and its rambunctious, rowdy fans. The stands are packed with people dressed in the team's colors, red, white, and black, waving Cholos flags, singing original fight songs to timpani beats and trombones, and insulting the other team. Inside the stadium, Agustin Diaz is smoking a cigarette by a food stand. He lives in San Diego now, but he was born and raised in Tijuana. Everything he's wearing has the Cholos logo on it, right down to his cape and a big stuffed dog on his hat.
Now that we got a team right here, so I'm 100% with him. I wear my pet a Cholo, I wear my wristband, and even on my cell phone is the Cholo, the big dog and everything. I am super Cholo. Even if they just go down to the second division, I'm still going to be Cholo.
It's not going to happen.
No, that for sure is not going to happen.
5 years ago, the Cholos were a barely known second division team. Now they're in the lead in the Mexican League's first division, ahead of legendary teams like Chivas and America. This means, in the soccer world, they're a full-fledged meteoric phenomenon. Wes Braddock is a principal at a San Diego County high school and holds season tickets called Cholo Passes, which cost up to 3,800 pesos, or about $300.
When the Cholos advanced out of what they call the Liga del Ascenso, the Ascending League, and I was at that game that they won that put them into the Mexican Premier League, it was very similar to me, almost more emotional than when the Chargers went to the Super Bowl in 94. I mean, people were riding up and down the street, honking their horns, waving flags. In the city, it really has been good for the image of the city and the people of the city.
Most of all, he says, it brings residents of San Diego and Tijuana together and showcases their similarities rather than their differences. Roberto Cornejo agrees. He's the Cholos' assistant general manager and a resident of both the U.S. and Mexico. He says about 25% of the team's fan base comes from the U.S., bringing together the two countries, he says, was his vision all along.
Soccer in San Diego is very big. The majority of kids play either rec or some type of club in their life as they're young. San Diego is an educated population in terms of soccer, and Tijuana has, I think, more links to San Diego than, say, Mexico City or farther south.
Several of the Cholos players are from the U.S. side, like midfielder Joe Corona, who grew up in South San Diego County and started his career with the U.S. men's under-23 team.
I feel proud to be part of this new atmosphere. I feel that everything Cholos has done has been amazing during the past 3 years. I think it's had a lot of progress. So, I mean, I feel special to be able to be a part of this.
In the last 2 years, the team's expanded northward, opening youth academies in San Diego's South Bay and in Riverside County. The Cholos' Roberto Cornejo.
In the academies, we're trying to develop players. If they make it pro with us, that's great. If they're able to get a college scholarship and get their college degree via soccer and through our training, then that's just as good for us.
This season's been especially good for the Cholos, who play in the Mexican League semifinals against the venerable Club León this Sunday. From there, if they win, they go to the finals. And if they win the finals, they become league champions, which is sure to bring in even more fans from both sides of the border. For the California Report, I'm Brooke Binkowski in Tijuana.
Want to know what song we're playing right now? Well, you can find out, plus listen to complete versions of all the music you hear on the California Report. Just follow us on Spotify. Playlists are updated every day. Go to californiareport.org.
Carry on.
Singer-songwriter Rupa Maria grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, but her childhood included long stints far away from the U.S. That multicultural upbringing is reflected in the music she creates with her band, Rupa and the April Fishes. You're just as likely to hear strains of bossa nova as gypsy waltzes, or reggae, or R&B. Rupa prefers to use just her first name in interviews, in part to separate her music from her other profession, practicing medicine at UC San Francisco. She stopped by recently to talk with us about her band's new album, Build, and how her music is influenced by her work as a physician. Well, Rupa, welcome.
Hello.
Good to have you here. I want to begin by asking you about your upbringing.
Okay.
You were born here in California and spent some time here, but then you went back to India to live with your grandparents at the age of...
Four years old.
Mm-hmm. So tell me, first of all, what kind of music were you listening to as a little girl?
Oh, I was surrounded by a bunch of different styles of music. My father was a fan of Willie Nelson and Roger Miller and old 1930s Bollywood soundtracks in classical Hindustani music. And my mother, who was going to be a concert pianist, she was a fan of Rachmaninoff and Beethoven, Bach, and then the Beatles. So I was sort of immersed in this soup until about the age of 10 when we moved to France.
And, you know, your first album was primarily in French, I believe. The second one mostly in Spanish. And your new one, Build, is primarily English with a little bit of Mayan dialect in there. Talk about that process of writing in a different language and also the impact on your audiences listening to a language that they may not understand.
That palette of languages is so beautiful to me, the rhythm and inherent lyricism in a particular language. I say our first album is for the bedroom, the second album is for the kitchen, and the third album now is for the garden. And on this latest album, Build, I've been playing more with putting more than one language into the same song, which is something I started doing on the last album. And it feels exciting to be able to pull from, you know, this gumbo of language to create a kind of a pastiche and collage sound of languages.
Well, that's a great segue into one of the tracks from your new album. It's called Electric Gumbo Radio. And before we hear it, anything you want to say about it?
It's a wake-up call. It's time to wake up and hear that it's not just an Arab Spring. It's not just an Occupy movement. It's not just those crazy Greeks. It's something that's happening world over. And it's been a real privilege for the last 4 years to be on the road traveling as a musician because I see my role as a mendicant, like someone who's traveling in the old style from town to town or from area to area. And we end up in all these places where the dialogue is just incredible.
I got a letter today from Guantanamo Bay. A message in a bottle landed on my shore. It reads SOS, a cry from the darkness. This is how it hits the iron fist. I was picked up off the streets of my hometown, locked up in a cell since 2001, and nobody has told me what I've done. Still they break me every day on the barrel of their gun. You can call it questioning, call it necessity. You can call it anything. This is Electric Gumbo Radio.
That is Electric Gumbo Radio from the new album Build from Rupa and the April Fishes. How do you think about politics? How do your politics fuse into your music and vice versa?
Well, I see as an artist that my job is to be a witness to life and to recount it in a way that not only describes what I'm seeing but also elevates the discussion. And it greatly influences my music to witness who is disenfranchised, whose voice is invisible, what kind of suffering is created through that invisibility. And that is not only influenced by my work as an artist, but also as a doctor.
You are a physician, as you said. You're a physician and a professor of medicine at UC San Francisco. How do you balance those two things? They seem so different, and the demands are so different. What is the balance?
For the last 8-9 years, I've been working part-time at UCSF, so 6 months in my duties as a physician, and then 6 months on the road. And this last year has been an interesting period because I am purposefully trying to practice medicine for free. So when I'm in the San Francisco area, or even when I'm on the road, to see my work in medicine as a gift is creating a interesting dialogue in my own mind about what does it mean to be a physician? What is the role of a physician?
I sit here and wonder what spell I've been under as I open my eyes. Everyone's disappeared, and it's some kind of eerie, it's some kind of strange, it's some kind of silence as things rearrange. Oh, I'm mystified.
Are there ways in which the patients influence your music or your songwriting?
Oh, for sure. You know, sometimes it's very specific and detailed. The song Metamorphosis is about those changes that we can't stop, that we actually have to go through, where we will never, ever be the same.
Some of the music on Build is very personal, like the title track. But I'm wondering if there's one song in particular that you like, that you're proud of, that you like listening to or playing.
I would say the title track, Build.
And when I lose my way, I just drop to my knees. I put my hands to the ground now, and I'm Build.
For me, that song came out of a sense of disillusionment of our political process in the United States, how representational democracy doesn't really represent the people who are making decisions are representing often their own interests or the interests of the corporations that keep them in power. So how can we mobilize our own creative force, our own creative edge to create what we want in our society?
Rupa is the lead singer and songwriter with Rupa and the April Fishes. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
And you can see the videos for Metamorphosis and Build at californiareport.org. And that's the California Report, a production of KQED Public Radio in San Francisco. You can always find us online at californiareport.org or at facebook.com/thecaliforniareport. Our director is Susie Rocho. The engineer today is Howard Gelman. We have additional engineering from Paul Lancour and Danny Bringer. Our online team includes Lisa Pickoff-White, David Marks, and Don Clyde. Our interns are Catherine Borgeson and Rachel Johnson. Our associate senior producer is Victoria Malione. The senior producer is Ingrid Becker. I'm Scott Schaefer. Thanks for listening. Have a great holiday weekend. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California, and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995. And the California Endowment. Health happens in schools at calendow.org. And Chevron, committed to helping California grow by supporting small businesses and investing in education. More information available at chevron.com.